We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 118. Scott, how's the West Coast going?
The West Coast is good. I'm out here in San Francisco for a kind of an extended weekend vacation. My wife has a conference out here, and so I just kind of hopped in a plane and joined her and tagged along. We had a fun weekend. We went. I've never been out here before. I know you've been here a few times. I think both of us now have recorded a podcast from San Francisco at one point.
Yeah, one of my best friends from growing up lives out there, and then I had another friend who moved out there for about a year. So I've been to San Fran at least like 10 times.
Yeah, cool. This is my first time.
It's one of my favorite cities in the country.
Yeah, it's a cool city. I must say, it feels overpopulated though. The downtown area,
it's tiny
at night. I know, it's just like there's people freaking everywhere. I mean, it feels like
homeless.
Crazy. Yeah, we've had a good time. We packed in a lot of stuff. Headed out to Napa for a day or two. Did some of the redwoods.
Have not done that yet.
We did. I'm going to Alcatraz tomorrow. I'm excited for that. That's going to be.
It's touristy, but it's actually really fun. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And if it's a nice day, it's the best views of the city.
Oh, no doubt. Well, we have that cruise that goes over there. I love that stuff. I love the whole storylines behind the guys at Capone going out there. And I don't know. I think it's really interesting. So even if it's touristy, I'm sure I'll be in my element. It'll be fun, and I'll get some good pictures. I'm pumped for that. And then we got a boat ride that's going for sunset. Watch out now. Take some notes, gentlemen. A catamaran going around the San Francisco Bay Bridge and the whole area, basically the skyline, at sunset for Valentine's Day. So boom, gonna be doing some nice stuff.
Well, it serves you. You had to do that because your wife, she's working. She's making all the money. She brings you out there for a conference. You got to pay her back in some way.
Yeah, no doubt. Exactly. I'm lucky to be here. I'm happy to be here. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to do San Francisco right. So I don't know how many times I'll be back out here. It's kind of a trip. And to tell you the truth, it's a cool city. I don't know if I could see myself out here full time. I always kind of picture myself in a city wherever I'm visiting, if I could live there. And It's just kind of spread out. California has that same vibe to me, up and down. It's all just too spread out for me.
Well, it's funny. I think San Francisco is the most compact California city.
It probably is. You're right.
It's a whole city packed into like 7 by 7 mile little area, whereas LA's got like 50 mile radius. They consider LA like all the way out to the desert, all the way to the beach. It's insane.
We're staying a little bit outside the city, so that's probably why I'm thinking that as well, just because we ended up renting a car and going in and all this crap. So it's a cool city. I tell you, there's a lot of people here though. I can't believe how many people it feels like. They're like everywhere.
Well, have you been to Manhattan recently?
It doesn't feel, but Manhattan doesn't feel like I expect it. I don't know. It feels different. It feels like there's more per like square foot.
Do you have a chance to walk by the Giants stadium?
I drove by it. Yeah, I drove by it. I didn't get to walk by it, but we drove by it and I saw the, it reminds me of Camden Yards, actually, because you wouldn't know that it's actually a stadium.
Look like that.
Yeah, it looks like a warehouse.
Yeah. I saw a Dodgers-Giants game there. It's a great place to see a game. It's right on the water. I mean, it gets cold. It's crazy how cold it gets at night in San Francisco, even in August. People say August is like the coldest month of the year, ironically. But it was like 45 degrees at night at the game I was at. I was like, it's the middle of summer. What is going on?
Yeah, it sneaks up on you too. It comes pretty quick.
So as people are listening to this podcast, it is Pitchers and Catchers Day. Congratulations, everyone. We made it through the winter. Tomorrow you will see, or today as you're listening, you will see plenty of pictures of people walking in to this spring training facility, even though I feel like a lot of Yankees have already shown up. It's been a good year for people showing up early and getting their work in. But in honor of pitchers and catchers, that will be our code for the 25% off fan shop this week. Use code pitchers and catchers, all one word. Don't misspell it. I'm trusting everyone to spell correctly. And you'll get 25% off.
For someone who can't read very well, you're asking a lot from people and demanding something about spelling and words. I don't know if that should come from you.
I don't read too good.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. You know, we're going to hear a lot of interviews about people talking about how good they feel. That's something to look forward to. And then we're going to see all sorts of reporters looking for any possible story they can get from all these guys there. It's going to be a potluck of pretty dull stories for probably about 2 weeks.
The only time you really get a juicy story is if someone shows up 50 pounds overweight.
Right, right. Or there's something happens at night somewhere. Little Super Bowl fun, you know, when they go and they go out and everybody, you know, when I think when you get with your boys again, things can happen because, right, you know, you get excited.
It's like the first night when you have a reunion, like with college buddies or something, yeah, everything goes off the rails really quickly. It's like 10:30 at night and everyone's blackout drunk.
Exactly. Exactly. So when the boys are back in town and you're everybody's together, then, you know, damage can happen for sure. So hopefully everybody's minding their P's and Q's.
Did you see the picture that Big Mike, Mike Pineda, posted on Instagram with him and his little entourage there?
I've seen some Pineda pictures, and he was looking
a little hefty.
Yeah, yeah.
So my money is on Pineda for the out of shape news for the Yankees. But do we really care that he's a little extra around the midsection?
I know, but do we really care about that? It's not like I don't think being in shape is going to help him much. Maybe he's on the CC diet. Maybe he's like, CC got in touch with him and he's like, look, Mike, just let it go. Just relax. Stop thinking about being in shape. Stop thinking about pitching. Stop thinking about, you know, dressing like you're in 2017. Cause if you see his pictures, he definitely looks like he's like 1980s Miami Vice, him and Severino. Just let it go. Just relax. And I think that's what it looks like he's doing. So maybe he's on the Captain Crunch, and he's going to come in and he's just going to throw strikes, lots of them.
All I know is he's pitching for a contract, so I don't care if he looks like CC Sabathia or like Jake Arrieta, who's probably the most in-shape pitcher. As long as he pitches well, that's all I care about. Spring training Bronx Pinstripes outing will be down there the 24th and 25th of March. We're still trying to lock down a location for where we want to meet up with people. But that's a Friday and Saturday game. It's after the World Baseball Classic, so all the players will be back. That's really like the last tune-up before the regular season gets going. So it should be a really good weekend to be down there. I had a lot of fun last year. I'm looking forward to it this year. It's a little over a month away. So, again, plan your spring training around the 24th and 25th of March. And final bit of housekeeping news here. Hopefully you guys heard and enjoyed the 61 podcast. Scott, we got some good feedback on Twitter, which was nice.
Yeah, we did.
It was the first time we have done something like that, where it hasn't been a very, you know, current Yankees news podcast.
Yeah, and I think this new revelation that it was decent and people liked it actually opens the doors for us for some other stuff that we can do, I think. So, you know, I think now our brains are going to be racked and getting some good, interesting stuff out there Yankees related. So I'm glad everybody liked it. I had fun. I actually had more fun doing it than I was expecting, to tell you, if I'm being honest.
Yeah,
I was a little hesitant. You could tell.
I kind of dragged you into it.
Yeah, and that's fine. You know, that's what you got to do. You got to go outside your zone every once in a blue moon. But it was fun, and I think we could find some more movies like that that have some Yankees ties to them. I mean, even baseball movies in general, I think we could do that and bring it back to some Yankee stuff. There's a lot of things that we could do. So I'm glad people liked it.
We promise we're going to keep this podcast baseball. So we're not going to go off and start reviewing the new Star Wars movie or anything like that. But yeah, just because it's not exactly Yankee specific, if we go with a baseball movie, I think people will enjoy that. We got some suggestions, one of them being Pride of the Yankees, which I have not seen, and also The Scout, which I believe I have seen. I think it's like an early 90s comedy, but haven't seen it in a long time. So that's two potential next movie podcasts that we could do.
Cool. I haven't even looked at a list yet, so we can – Pride of the Yankees is definitely one. The Scout, I don't even know what that is. I don't remember that movie.
I don't either. I mean, I know I've seen at least parts of it, but
Is it a Dennis Quaid? Anyway. Is it a Dennis Quaid movie, or I mean a Kevin Costner movie?
No one got that joke. All right, let's get into it. Of course, we released the podcast last Tuesday, and Chris Carter signed like 5 seconds after we released the podcast. But the Yankees kind of made some news, definitely a surprise signing, that they signed Chris Carter, the NL home run leader from last year. He hit 41 bombs. He was also the NL strikeout leader with 206. So he's a Adam Dunn from the right side type player. 1 year, $3 million with a $500,000 signing bonus and an extra $500,000 in incentives. I feel like the reaction to this was one of two. Either people hated it or people were saying, this is a great bargain, what's to lose? Which side do you fall on, or do you feel differently about it?
I just don't understand why people hate it, I guess. I don't see what the problem is with this move.
Well, I'm about to tell. I'll tell you in a little bit because I'm one that hated it. Okay.
The fact that Brian Cashman was able to get a guy that hits 41 home runs as an insurance policy for practically no money, for $3 million, signing bonus of $500, and then another $500 on top of that with incentives, but that he's not going to get because it's tied to at-bats, which he's probably not going to have, unless there's an injury, and then it's a genius move. So the fact that this guy is literally the NL home run king from last year, had 41 home runs, and he's still out there, and you get him for peanuts, why not? I don't really understand. I don't see a downside to this. The fact that, you know, everybody's talking about Tyler Austin this and Tyler Austin that, it's going to cut into the time. Well, maybe if he's not playing well, then yeah, it might cut into his time. But if he is playing well, they're going to find a spot for him because he can play the outfield as well. And your boy is sweating because he was playing some third base too. So I think Tyler Austin has the flexibility where he can still be an asset no matter what. What this does, though, this gives the Yankees some more leeway at first base with the right-handed bat, and also gives some days off to Holiday with a right-handed, because there was nobody else really that was going to take the right-handed at-bats for Holiday if he needed a day off, unless you're talking about Tyler Austin, and I don't really think the Yankees see him in that role. So I think this was a no-brainer when the contract details came out. I think it's a no-brainer.
Well, the reason I hated it for a few reasons. What you were saying about it, I think the biggest reason people disliked it was because they're fearful that'll take at-bats away from the young guys. Austin, Bird, potentially Aaron Judge. A number of different guys could have at-bats taken away from them. Yes, he hit 41 home runs, but he also played 160 games last year. He's not going to sniff 150 games this year, 160 games this year, unless, of course, there's an injury, which we don't want. But he's going to do is, if he plays sporadically, I just picture him being a four strikeout per night guy. I feel like he only, his home runs is because he swings out of his shoes every time. So yeah, when he gets 700 plate appearances for a season, he'll mash 41 home runs because he's just swinging as hard as he can at every pitch. And I understand it was only $3 million, potentially $4 million, but Brian Cashman was on with Mike Francesa last week, and the way he talked about Carter was that they signed him because he makes sense for the budget. And I don't like that. I rather sign players that make sense for the roster than make sense for the budget. This was a cheap option. So they're like, yeah, okay. Because it's only $4 million potentially. Yeah, let's take a flyer on it. Rather than saying, what does our roster for 2017 need? What is going to have this team continue to develop? Because Chris Carter does not have this team continuing to develop. This is a purely one season thing. And he's 30, going on 31 years old. He has no future with the Yankees. All he's doing is taking away time from other people we'd rather see.
Well, see, that's the thing. He is just a flyer. I mean, that's what it is. You're talking about you want to see Cashman improve the roster at this point. Well, at this point, I think they were pretty set with the roster. They were fine. But when they saw the opportunity that this guy was going to be available for that number, for that money, then they had to do it. I mean, I totally understand it. If they wanted to sign him and it was part of the roster and it was part of what they were doing to improve the team on the field, and he was plan A or even plan B from the beginning, he would have been signed already. But he wasn't. He was a guy that left, stayed there and stayed there and stayed there. And at the point when Cashman saw that he was still available, and then, hey, maybe we could use another guy. Bird's coming off of an injury. We don't know what we're going to get with Austin yet. At least this guy is some right-handed bat who can play first base and provide some insurance.
But that's the thing. He's not a good fielder.
Yeah, he's
terrible.
Compared to where
he had 41 home runs last year.
Compared to where we are, 41 home defense backing up. It's, you know, he's serviceable. It's not, he's not going to be the starting first baseman. He's not going to be that guy.
He hit 41 home runs last year and was barely above league average player.
That's
almost impossible to do.
Again, this is a power move off of the bench. That's what it is. It's a backup move. It's a move that's there for.
So now we're signing $4 million bench players.
It's not that bad. I mean, Stephen Drew was how much was he? He was $5 million, right?
He played every day.
Oh God, yes he did. To all of our dismay, he played every single day. And
well, Buster only reported that the Yankees were talking with Milwaukee even before they non-tendered him about a potential trade for Carter. So it seems like Cashman has kind of had a hard-on for him from the beginning. That was before they signed Holiday, though. I again, for the millionth time, I'm taking it back to Mike Napoli would have been a better fit. Because now when you add up Holiday's $13 million plus Carter's $3.5 million, potentially $4 million, you get $17 million. Mike Napoli just signed for 1 year and $10 million. And he fits into this roster a billion times better than the combination of Carter and Holiday.
Well, yeah, I know. But the thing about Mike Napoli is that we're talking about, it's hindsight. We're Monday morning quarterback, the Mike Napoli signing, because...
But that's what Cashman's job is, to know the market and to figure this shit out.
It is his job to an extent, but it's also his job to take what he can find out about the market and then make the right decision at the time and make the appropriate decision. And honestly, I don't think there's that much difference between Holiday and Napoli. There just isn't. And the fact that they knew they could get Holiday and at that time for a contract that they were comfortable with, they had to jump on it. And I don't think, I mean, obviously nobody knew that Mike Napoli was going to be available at this point. Whoever, where'd he go? Texas? He ended up with Texas, right? I mean, they made a pretty well, obviously waiting. He has history in Texas. So I don't know. That was a very interesting fluid situation, because I think everybody was surprised that he was available at the price tag that he was available for when he signed. And same thing goes for Chris Carter. I think people didn't realize what he was going to be available for.
He was out there this whole time. Why did no one sign him? I mean, Milwaukee didn't want him.
You could say the same thing about Napoli. You could say the same thing about Napoli.
He's averaged over the last three or four seasons for Milwaukee over 30 home runs, and they just kicked him aside like he's a piece of trash.
Napoli is too much
of an uncertain. That tells you something.
Napoli is too much of an uncertain for me. I don't trust Napoli at all that he's going to do what he did in Cleveland last year.
Of course it is. But that's where the Yankees are right now. They're not looking for long-term solutions.
Exactly.
Greg Bird is supposed to be the first baseman of the future. So all we needed for this coming season was a backup first baseman who could hit right-handed and could also DH. And that is literally the definition of Mike Napoli right now.
It's also literally the definition of Chris Carter.
No, it's not, because Chris Carter is not as good of a hitter as Mike Napoli. Yeah, he might have more home runs, but he's a horrible hitter. And the Yankees already strike out too much. They don't put the ball in play enough. That's why they didn't score a lot of runs last year.
It's a totally different roster. You can't compare last year to this year's roster and how they're going to do. It's a totally different.
It's not a total different roster. The only difference is subtracting A-Rod and Teixeira.
That's pretty big. It's a completely different middle of the lineup. You have Gary Sanchez for an entire year. You have Bird back in the middle of that lineup. Matt Holliday. It's a completely restructured lineup. This lineup is not going to strike out as much.
The team was bad at putting bat on ball, and we just signed the guy who's the worst in the league at putting bat on ball.
Yep. Well, I don't believe it's the same team in the sense that they're going to be as bad striking out. I think there's going to be a lot more contact made this year, and the fact that Chris Carter is there, I just don't see what the big problem is. I really don't. Why people are getting their panties in a bunch about this dude who signed for nothing and is going to provide some pop?
I'll tell you why.
Whose roster spot is he taking
with this team? We're looking at something that's temporary, and he could potentially take Tyler Austin's roster spot.
If Tyler Austin does not perform, he will take his spot probably, but that's because he won't perform. It has nothing to do with the fact that Chris Carter's there. It has everything to do with the fact that Tyler Austin doesn't perform. That's the only way that happens.
If they have identical springs, Austin will be sent down.
Well, no, I think there's room for both of them. I think there's room for both of them.
Someone's coming off the roster.
You're right, and I know, and I think we're going to get to that a little later. Because I got a theory.
love it when your brain starts working. I bring it back to this seemed like a budget a budget decision and not a roster decision. And right now the Yankees should not be, they should be concerned with improving their roster for 2017 plus a few years, not just a budget decision for the next one season. I don't like it.
Fine.
I don't like Chris Carter. I don't like the type of player he is. I'm going to hate when he keeps striking out with guys on base. And when I already apologized on Twitter for all the shit I talk about him because I know it's coming.
Well, I'm just happy that there's someone else besides Chase Headley now because I'm getting tired of that. So now we can at least direct your anger towards somebody else. And that's fine. I'm happy with that because now maybe Chase Headley will be able to get some cuts, get some slack cut and actually have a good season. Because you're not
riding
his ass.
It doesn't tell you anything that the Milwaukee Brewers, potentially the worst team in baseball, had no want for a 41 home run hitter.
No, I don't at all. Because I think the Yankees, while they are understanding that this is a process for a couple years, I think in the back of their minds that if they add a couple pieces here and there, they might be able to compete for a wild card. And this type of guy, a power spot off the bench for that was just available at the end, they didn't think was available, wasn't a guy that they were targeting, but then all of a sudden is there for this money. Like, why the hell not? Let's see what happens. I mean, to tell you the damn truth, if he didn't make the roster out of spring training, I would not be totally surprised if they just ate that and just said, "Hey, we were just going on a whim and seeing if this guy could produce for us." I wouldn't be surprised.
They're already paying. He's guaranteed $3.5 million regardless. They're not cutting him out of spring training. I could see them cutting him midseason when he's batted 150 times and has 91 strikeouts with 3 home runs.
He'll have more than 3 home runs. His power is going to play pretty well at Yankee Stadium.
Who says his power is going to remain consistent? Who says he's going to hit on a 40 homer pace when he plays 3 times a week?
Me, I'm saying it.
I think that's pretty difficult to do.
Hot take.
I think we've seen that time and time again where players cannot produce at the same level when they play sporadically. He's been a full-time player for, to his credit, he's been an everyday player. He's pretty durable for the Brewers. He played every day for them last year. He missed one game. So who says he's going to produce at that when he's only getting 7 at-bats a week? And he might pinch hit late in games. But again, it's the American League, not the National League, so pinch hitting does not come into play nearly as much.
That's why I think of this was a big roster move in the sense that it was a lot of – it was a security move. It was the best available at this time. I think Cashman was going to go and find somebody
Actually, that brings up a good point. Security move. Do you think they have concerns with Bird?
Yeah, I do. I don't know if they're direct concerns about his health currently. More the fact that, you know, that could happen. You know, I don't know if they see anything currently, but they do know what the situation is. The situation is that he's coming back from a major surgery. He's been out for a long time and things can occur. Things can pop up. They don't really know how he's going to bounce back because they haven't seen it yet. So I don't know if there's direct concern because of his physical health currently, but I do think that, you know, what they're doing is setting themselves up if that were to be the case. And I think that's smart for them to at least do that.
You want to know how screwed up my brain is? As soon as I saw that the Yankees signed Chris Carter, I'm not
Greg
exaggerating.
Greg Bird's hurt.
Yep, that was my first reaction.
Yeah, well.
That's how scarred I am, or maybe how negative of a person I am.
I think it's the negativity. The negativity has scarred you.
What did you think of Tyler Austin's comments on with Francesa, saying he was a little frustrated that the Yankees signed Carter? And to his fairness, to his credit, he went on to say, but he's another guy that can help us win. But he did say I was a little frustrated at first. So he gave us an honest gut reaction to when he found out the news.
Yeah, I like that. I have no problem with him talking about how he feels and that he's frustrated. He should be frustrated. He should have a chip on his shoulder.
The dude's been working out at the complex since like late December, it feels like.
Maybe that's why they've signed him. Maybe that's why they signed Carter, because they did see Tyler Austin work out for the past 2 months and they didn't like it.
What if, and I'm sorry if I'm stepping on your conspiracy theory coming up later, but what if the Yankees have plans at just moving Austin to third base full time and getting rid of Chase Headley?
Oh, you're just getting way ahead of yourself. You're getting too excited.
Then I love the Carter signing. If Chris Carter means no more Chase Headley in my life, thank you, Brian Cashman.
Not happening.
I know. All right. Any other thoughts on Chris Carter? I think we've exhausted it.
No, I just think people need to relax, let the guy play. It was a no-risk signing. Who cares?
Ooh,
it's fine.
Relax. Taking a page out of Aaron Rodgers' book.
R-E-L-A-X.
So about 2 weeks ago, you and I stated, proclaimed on this podcast that only Didi Gregorius would be playing in the World Baseball Classic. And now it turns out that 10 Yankees in the organization have confirmed for the World Baseball Classic. Off of the Major League roster, Dellin Betances will be on the Dominican. Severino is on the Dominican as well, but he's part of the designated pitcher pool. So I guess he'll only get called upon if one of their pitchers gets hurt, or I'm not entirely sure how that works. Tyler Clippard with the U.S., Tommy Lane with Italy, and Richie Bleier with Israel designated pitcher pool. Did not know he was Jewish. But the reason I did not think any other Yankees would be on the teams, and this does not really apply to Betances, but I didn't think any of them were good enough to make these teams.
Well, I think Clippard's definitely good enough to make the bullpen of a USA team. I think I don't know how many guys have. I can imagine.
You're right. No, you're totally right.
How big are these rosters? I have to assume they're relatively expanded, right? Just to make sure that guys don't get overworked. So
because they're not going to overwork pitchers.
Exactly. So they're going to have a lot of guys, a lot of bodies on these rosters, just in case things happen, or not to overwork guys, because I'm sure they have some pretty strict instructions from the major league teams. You know it. I guess all these guys were late ads, or they just didn't tell anybody that they were playing. But, you know, the biggest one, obviously the big two are Betances and Severino. And Severino if that designated pitcher pool is kind of like a reserve spot, then I'm not that worried about it. The only problem with that to me is that he's not with the team, not working out, not doing all that stuff. But it's not for that long. Betances, I'm not really, I guess he just doesn't care anymore. He's just like, what? You don't sign me, I'm going to go play for the WBC because you guys don't care about me at all. And I don't care how my arm feels at the end of the season. I'm going to go work it even more in the WBC because I've never had arm fatigue.
We've got to now add up his WBC pitches in addition to his regular season pitches, in addition to all the bullpen warm-up pitches he throws. He's going to have like a 10,000 pitches by the end of the season.
I know. B-whip.
His arm is going to be falling.
Would you just say bullpen warm-up pitches? B-whip? B-whip. I kind of like that.
I like it, too. It's probably already a stat, though. I understand, though, this is Betances' first chance to go to the WBC and potentially his last. So I totally understand why he wants to go. Isn't he from the Bronx?
Isn't Dellin Betances from the Bronx?
Yeah, but A-Rod was born in Washington Heights, but he played for the Dominican.
And when we were talking about that, I'm pretty sure that it did happen. And I think it was reversed, though. Didn't he play for the USA first and then went to the Dominican Republic team?
Yeah, it sounds like
it. Yeah, that sounds way more of an A-Rod move. Dellin Betances just chose his ancestry, and that's fine, even though he's from New York.
Last week we also kind of made fun of the Dutch for probably sucking and being one and done, but it turns out they finished fourth place in 2013. Eric Wink or Wenk at EIKKIER on Twitter clarified this for us. He sent me a link to their roster. I always kind of forget that there's some Dutch territory in South America, so they have a pretty big pool of players to pick from, because Xander Bogaerts is also on this team. So between Bogaerts and Didi, they've got two of the best shortstops in the league.
Yeah, they have, it's not South America, it's in the Caribbean, right? It's Antigua.
Or Caribbean.
Isn't it Antigua?
Yeah, it's Aruba, Antigua, but isn't also Brazil part of Brazil a Dutch territory? Brazil's weird. Brazil's like got like 50 different nationalities in it.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think Brazilian players, though, played on the Dutch team. I don't know. I do know that, like you said, the Aruba and then Antigua as well. And he's from Antigua. I think he was born in Europe and then grew up in Antigua. Anyway, yeah, they do have some good shortstops, but you know, Simmons can't hit. They'll field their asses off. They're going to be a hell of a defensive team up the middle.
Their defensive metrics are going to be off the chart.
Yeah, these guys grew up together playing short and second base, I think. So that'll be good stuff to watch. It'll be fun to watch. Maybe we can get some Ozzie Smith like highlights from those two.
Egg on our face, though. They finished fourth last time out.
Who pitches? Who throws the ball?
Who knows? Does pitching really matter in this stuff? I feel like offense is what.
Okay, so what who's hitting the ball WBC? For the Dutch team then?
I don't think the U.S. players care. So So I think it's team, like a lot of these players for the Dutch have probably been playing together a long time.
That's true. They do. A lot of these guys, that's it. That's, I think, one of the downfalls for the USA team is these guys, not all of them, like very few of them play together for a long time. Whereas you come to these smaller countries that play baseball all the time, a lot of these guys grew up playing with each other and, you know, have similar styles. There's a lot more variance, I think, in the U.S. than if you go to like a Dominican team or a Venezuelan team. Because a lot of them actually play in the winter together as well. So there's definitely a lot more uniformity, I think, with these Caribbean teams.
It's kind of like in the Little League World Series.
Kind of like in the Little League World Series, yeah. But the USA is good in the Little League World Series. Doesn't really apply there.
Well, the USA has like 1,000 teams, and then you get one team from Japan, one team from Taiwan. I always thought that was unfair, that other countries get to send one team, and the U.S. has like a team from every state, it seems.
There's a whole bunch of regulations and restrictions on it still. They have like a levels of tryouts that, and even in like a Taiwanese team, they have to have, I can't even explain it right now, but it's
yeah, why I was
I'm
like,
trying to I have it in my head, but I can't like get it out of my mouth. There are still restrictions that limit them from making just like one big super team though.
Yeah,
because you can't do that in the U.S. either. Like you can't do it in a specific township. You have to cut the team up. I remember when I coached, there was an A and a B league, and they did that so that the players were split up, and the B league could only send one all-star team, whereas the A league had to send a separate all-star team. You couldn't have one town all-star team.
How many 14-year-olds that didn't have accurate birth certificates Danny Almontes were you allowed to send?
Yeah. As many as I could get in there. My Photoshop skills were on point for that.
It's like, that guy has a 5 o'clock shadow and he's 6'6". I don't think he's 12 years old.
Look at that ID. There's no 5 o'clock shadow there. He hit puberty.
It is pretty funny when you see some kids who clearly have hit puberty and they're like 6 feet tall, 200 pounds. And then you got some shrimps in there, like 5'5", 110 pounds.
Yeah.
It's totally unfair.
5'5" is pretty tall for that though. I mean, some of these kids are like 4'10".
Yeah. Small strike zone.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. I wrote something about this last week about the pace of play in baseball. This has been like a long running issue. Manfred has kind of made it one of his top priorities is to improve the pace of play in baseball. So we briefly mentioned that they're adjusting the strike zone and also getting rid of intentional walks last week. They proposed that to the players union. So those could be in effect this coming season. But now it was announced that they're in the lower levels of the minors testing an extra innings rule where they place a runner on second base to start extra innings. Obviously, this is to speed up extra innings so you don't get those 15, 16, 17 inning games. Even Joe Torre talked about how those are terrible for your team. It's really bad. It taxes your bullpen and all that kind of stuff. It's still rare that you get a 15-plus inning game. And me being a diehard baseball fan, I enjoy those because that's when all the wacky shit kind of happens and you see position players pitch. But I guess the league doesn't like that. And I understand why. I mean, if it's game 107 and it's the middle of July and you don't need 18 innings to decide a game, I totally understand that. But this whole runner on second base thing opens up a huge can of worms. And I know it's only the lower level of the minors and it's next to impossible that it would actually be put into play in Major League Baseball. But if it ever was, I would freaking hate it.
The fact that they're actually testing it out, though, is scaring me, to tell you the truth. The fact that they're actually implementing it at some level at all in baseball is scary to me. It's so gimmicky and ridiculous, and it's like Manute Bol coming and getting signed for a contract to go play in some small town in South Carolina and them selling out because Manute Bol is going to go up there and take a swing at a 7-footer trying to hit a baseball. It's that type of gimmick. It's like a circus.
It's like beer softball. It's like what they do in beer softball leagues.
It's like kickball leagues. It's not even softball. It's like kickball leagues. It's ridiculous. If you start with a runner on second base, and you touched on this in your article, there are so many problems with that. First of all, it's ridiculous. Whoever put the idea out there in the first place should have been slapped, open hand slapped across the face. And the fact that they're actually implementing it, I don't know who said, oh, yeah, like there's a bunch of people that said this was a good idea.
Yeah, let's run through the problems.
Okay, you're going to bunt. Who's the bunting?
Who's the runner?
Right. Who is the runner?
First thing, who's the runner? Okay. Is it the guy who made the last out?
That's what it is in softball.
Or is it a pinch runner? Right. It's probably the guy who made the last out.
Right.
But what if it's a pinch runner? Can you reuse that pinch runner? Is that an extra roster spot? You have we can call up Jorge Mateo and just put him on second base because he's our fastest guy? Okay, there's problem number one. The first thing that managers are going to do is they're going to bunt, right?
Yes.
Because anytime you lead off an extra innings or a late innings game with a double and it's a close game, you bunt. So there's a runner on third with one out. Infield comes in. And now it's bloop, bleeder, wild pitch, number of ways the runner can score. I have no doubt it will achieve what they're going for to shorten games. But why are we – that is completely taking the result of the game out of the pitcher's hands. It's very rare that a pitcher, when he gives up a leadoff double, prevents that guy from scoring. I mean, it's extremely difficult. So that's totally unfair to the pitchers. Even if you have Mariano Rivera out there, he's at a disadvantage. And you should not be at a disadvantage when you have Mariano Rivera on the mound.
Yeah, the whole thing is too gimmicky. I don't even know why it's actually in play. And, yeah, I mean, what are they going to do next? Start off with a 1-1 count with one out? They're going to start implementing all of these forced opportunities in baseball to decide a game. I mean, if you're in the 16th or whatever the inning of a game, you want that to be the deciding factor, some stupid rule where some guy starts out at second base?
What happens in the playoffs? Do they get rid of the rule in the playoffs? Or is Game 7 of the World Series between the Cubs and the Indians going to be decided because a runner starts on second base?
I don't know. I mean, I would assume that because the rosters expand, they would get rid of something like this. But then again, now you're changing the rule. Now you're changing
right.
The game.
Now you're playing two different games in the regular season and the playoffs. That's even stupider.
It's terrible. It's absolutely
That's like how
terrible.
in football, how they don't call – in basketball, they don't call close penalties in the playoffs. But they call ticky-tack pass interference penalties in the regular season. It's like, well, now we're playing two different games.
There are real ways that they could speed this game up that are not gimmicky like that. But a lot of them, even off the field, right? A lot of these ways to slow down or to speed up the game are taking away dollars for Major League Baseball, and it's shortening the times in between things. But you're also at that point then limiting advertising time, and you're shortening that up, which leads to lost revenue for a league that will not lose revenue. So, do they really care that much? No, because they could do it if they wanted to.
Well, you're saying shorten the
time between the innings. Yes,
they're never going
to
do that.
I know, but if they wanted to speed up the game and that was really a problem for them, that's something that they could do right now with no problem.
They could the pitch clock. I wrote in my article, pitch clock is the only way you're going to speed up the game. It's the only time that you can shorten without taking away revenue. 20-second pitch clock.
It's not going to really make that much of a difference. It's really not.
No, I mean. It'll shorten it a handful of minutes, but that's
a handful
what
of minutes, right?
That's what they're going for. How many extra inning games are there?
That's the thing. Still, why are we so worried about these games that don't happen that often?
Yeah, we're worried about extra inning games, which happen maybe I don't know. I would guess 8 to 10% of the time, right?
Yeah, if that. I mean, it's just right. It's so rare.
You're worried about intentional walks, which happen every three games, to take away a minute of action.
So it's like they're looking at a game clock for a week of baseball, and they're trying to slow that, and they're trying to speed that up by a few minutes, rather than looking at an individual game and how long each game takes because of things that happen in every single game, like you're saying, like the pitcher or the time between innings. They're not really doing things for that. They're doing random places in a game that don't happen very often that are not going to speed each individual game up. It's like they're just trying to throw a bone to people and assume that we're all stupid and we're like, oh, okay, they're trying to speed this game up. When in reality, they're not doing that. What they're doing is they're messing with a great thing.
What if you get to the 15th inning, you have to take away your right fielder?
Again, I hate it. I hate all of these little changes. I think they're so ridiculous.
What if you get to the 13th inning, someone from the crowd has to come in and pitch?
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
What if you juice the balls in extra innings? The home run, you use the home run derby balls, the one that's like yellow and gold, like the extra money ball. The State Farm extra money ball. We can use that in extra innings.
Until a pitcher gets nailed in the head with a comebacker that's coming back like 200 miles per hour.
You can only throw fastballs in extra innings.
How about underhand?
Pitch machine.
Underhand?
Pitch machine in extra innings.
Wind tunnel. I like that one. That
all
was my
favorite.
The fan behind the big fan comes out.
Create a wind tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
like they used to do in the Metrodome.
I like that rule. Let's just have a home run derby. How about that? How about we just do a home run derby? Yeah. How about we do that? Like, it's like a penalty kick.
The NHL. Yeah, the NHL ends their overtime games on a shootout.
See, now we're talking. Now that's something that would be fun. You go 9 innings, you tie a game. You guys pick 3 guys. We pick 3 guys. The pitching coach or the bullpen coach goes out there and throws the batting practice or throws the balls to the players.
Oh no! See, I think it would be better if it's a pitch machine that's throwing like 109 miles an hour.
No, just a home run derby. Let's just see a home run derby. Boom.
Well, now
Bobby
Chris
Cano's
Carter
dad comes out and throws pitches.
Chris Carter makes sense now.
Oh, lethal extra inning weapon right there.
You would get guys like William Opeña and Chris Carter hanging on to teams like what am I thinking?
Dude, you would get guys from those softball leagues who hit home runs playing in the major leagues as a weapon for the major leagues for the extra.
It'd be
innings.
Fantastic. Like you get in hockey, you get the enforcers hanging on until they're like 47 years old because they can take punches.
Exactly.
You get fat guys who have done a lot of steroids in the 90s to hit home
Barry
runs.
Barry
Bonds would come.
Jose Canseco, perfect.
Oh, he'd be great.
Yeah. Now we're talking. Maybe we should start a different league. It'd be like the X Games.
It would be the equivalent of the XFL.
Yeah, the steroid baseball. MLB's back on steroids. That could be we're back on steroids. Jose Canseco versus Mark McGwire. Come see it. I like
it.
It
would just take, if this actually, like say starting this year, there was a runner on second base to start the extra innings. The first team to lose that way would be so pissed off that it would cause mayhem.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. They just need to back off. Just stop. Stop messing around.
All right. Before we get into mailbags, I want to take a second to remind people, if you have not done so, please, please, please give us a rating and review in iTunes. They're creeping. They're going up one by one each week, and it's great to see. We appreciate all the positive feedback. If you've been a long-time listener or you're a short-time listener, just go in there, give us 5 stars, give us a nice review. It actually really does help out the show's rankings in iTunes.
Especially with the season coming up. Especially with the season.
Just what I was going to say. People are going to start getting into baseball again. They're going to be searching Yankees. They're going to be searching baseball. We're going to be showing up. It's going to be good news for everyone. All right. You ready to get into some mailbags?
Let's do it.
You read the first one because it's long.
Oh, my God. It is long. Good Lord. All right. This one's from Mark. He said, "Hey guys, I've been a listener for over a year now, and I live in Tampa for 3 years. Heard you will be in Tampa and sucks because I will be going to the game on March 26th. We will be gone. I would love to have met up. But if you live in Tampa, first of all, let me stop there. If you live in Tampa, you could come out and meet us for a beer. So, you know, you could still hang out. I would love to have met up with you guys. Also, Seminole Heights is now becoming a hipster area, so it's not like walking through the hood of the Bronx. And that's fine because last year we definitely had our lives in our hands with we're walking around Tampa. Here's my question/hot take. With the Matt Holliday signing, why didn't we sign Pedro Alvarez? He's a New York City native from the Heights. He's a lefty batter. Why get a second right-handed bat who could do the same thing as Holliday? If they're both one-year deals, get the lefty for the short field porch. It seems like we will be a right-handed heavy lineup in the near future. Sanchez, Frazier, Torres, Mateo, Andujar, Castro, Judge, Austin, come on. Not to mention Machado when we sign him. Hopefully Carter doesn't send Bird back to AAA. We need to have Sanchez, Bird, Judge in the batting order. You need to buy me a drink for that. You do need to meet up with us and buy me a beer for reading that. And then mentioning Frazier, Torres, Mateo, Andujar in this sentence of bats that we're going to have to deal with in our lineup this year.
Playing by these rules, Bird, Didi, and I guess that's it. Those are the only two lefties, right?
Yeah.
Take a guess. How many home runs did Pedro Alvarez hit for the Orioles last year? I'll give you a hint. He batted 376 times.
Okay. 12 home runs.
22.
That's cool.
It's an interesting.
Nobody wanted to sign him either. He was the guy who signed very late, and I think he was attached to a draft pick, if I remember correctly, from the Pirates.
Yeah, from Pirates. I don't know. I don't remember about the draft pick, but it's an interesting take. It's interesting because I'd say if you rewound a year, we'd be saying the lineup is too left-handed heavy,
right,
with Ellsbury and Ellsbury Gardner, Didi, the fact that I think Teixeira's better side was always the left side, or at least that was his more power side. So interesting how the tables have turned.
There, you know, there's still the fact of the matter is the Ellsbury is also in there as a guy who will hopefully contribute more. I mean, they're not going to get power, but they're hoping that he can return. You know, he's going to hit the ball 4 inches further out in front of the plate, and he's going to be able to hit the ball better. That's the plan.
See, people, when that came out and they said he's going to try and hit the ball further out, that takes away like 16 times on base when he gets on by catcher's interference.
That's true, which is pretty
it's
nice
like
for
15
him.
Points off of his OBP.
I don't know. You know, Pedro Alvarez, he wasn't on the radar. It's just, again, like I said, they saw an opportunity, I think, that was just too good to pass up, and they jumped on it. I don't think it's anything more than that. I think people are getting too worked up about this Chris Carter thing.
Well, no, I think it's slightly more than that, because if we believe Buster, the Yankees were thinking about trading for him before. So
but
they have liked him.
But they didn't. They didn't sign him. I mean, Cashman
had their eye on. They had their eye on.
All that means is that Cashman had a conversation with somebody about something at some point. It was a passing conversation. You know how many of those conversations we could probably.
Brian Cashman has a Chris Carter fathead in his office.
Buster Olney could probably, if anybody signs with the Yankees tomorrow, he could say, "Oh, Brian Cashman did have a conversation with that guy 2 years ago about signing him, making a trade possibly." Because that's his job, is to go out there and find out what value is, find out what it takes to get certain guys. He has a you know, Girardi has his binder, Cashman has his binder.
Chris Carter was on Hal Steinbrenner's fantasy baseball team.
Well, perfect. Now he's going to do very well for his own team, so he's going to win in fantasy and on the field. Great.
I did love all of the spray chart overlays. People immediately like, "Oh, now Carter's going to hit 49 home runs at Yankee Stadium." It's like, all right, when he gets 750 plate appearances. All right, let's move on to the next mailbag. Scott in Ottawa says, "Hey guys, really enjoy the interviews you guys did with prospects during this really slow offseason. I want to know about your guys' baseball careers, Little League, high school, etc., and any funny baseball stories while you guys were playing." Scott, what level did you play until?
I actually stopped playing high school baseball my sophomore year because I couldn't pick up a ball and throw it any further. I had a really bad elbow injury. It still is a problem, and it just I couldn't even practice. So I actually stopped playing. I was playing JV my sophomore year, and that was it. I stopped playing. And then I picked it back up. I pitched and played second base, and then I picked it back up in when I was in college, and then I played for like 6 years after college in a summer league, and that is actually when my arm was feeling a lot better. My elbow today is complete trash. Like, I could throw for maybe 10 minutes and then I'm done, and I can't pick a ball up for like a week. I played the funny thing about my arm now is I played in a dodgeball league just for fun with some friends on a Friday night. This was like 3 years ago, and I could not lift my arm for a week after I played in this thing because I you know, you go out there and you throw these sponge balls as hard as you possibly can. And I literally couldn't lift my arm for a week. It affected my life. I couldn't do things for the entire week. And then it was just a terrible cycle because the following Friday I would do it all over again.
It's like, have you ever tried to throw a golf ball really far? You completely throw your shoulder out.
Yeah. It's like playing wiffle ball. It's the same thing. No, but I actually didn't play a lot in high school, and then I played a lot more baseball when I was in my 20s when I played in that summer league. So that was where I actually had the most fun playing. It was a good time. We had a good team, and we had a fun team. We had a lot of guys who played at different colleges all over the country and were playing in this summer league, and then we drank a lot of beer and, like I said last week, a lot of Red Bull vodkas. So it was a good time.
Do you feel like if you didn't get an elbow injury, you would have really been something? Like, you know how, what's his name? Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite is reminiscing about the old days. He could throw a football over a mountain. Could you throw 90 mile an hour heat if you didn't have your elbow injury?
No, I never could throw hard. That was one thing I couldn't do. But
you're like crafty Greg Maddux.
Yes, I could locate. I can still locate now. I could throw.
You were outthinking the hitters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can throw a ball wherever I want to throw the ball. I mean, that's something I'm very accurate with when I throw, and that's stayed true. So I do have accuracy. I think we should have a skills competition in Tampa. I think, and we should record it. I think it'd be fun.
Dude, I have not played baseball. I have not done baseball activities.
Oh, no, it doesn't. No, I'm not talking about real activities. I'm talking about, like, you know, putting a beer bottle on top of a bucket and trying to hit it from second base. Things like that.
Like at carnivals?
Yeah, like, you know, like they do in the minor leagues to win a game.
Like the Tom Emanski drill videos thrown in.
Yeah, we could go through the Tom Emanski drill. And, yeah, exactly.
Oh, Fred McGriff. I just remember those commercials. I was a catcher through high school, through my junior year of high school. I was a catcher, and then I tore my meniscus, and I was like, screw this, because I'm not going anywhere in baseball. I'm not going to play in college. I do not need to deal with a shredded knee for some varsity high school baseball. So I gave it up my junior year, and I liked baseball. I didn't love it. Love playing it though. It's kind of weird because all I did was watch it. But as far as playing it, I could take it or leave it when I was out there.
Oh man, it's by far my favorite sport playing. I love playing. I mean, I still go out and try to play. I play in a co-ed softball league now. That's where I am.
I would have fun in softball. I would like to play in a softball league. But as far as baseball goes, do you have any funny stories? The one that I always go to is that I was sophomore year practice, and it was the first time I ever did dip, and it was the last time I ever did dip because I kind of puked.
Like similar to the Sandlot, but it wasn't on a Ferris wheel.
It wasn't on a ride. I just kind of like spit up all over my shirt. I had like dip spit on my shirt. It was disgusting.
That's nasty. I don't really have any funny stories, I guess. We would bowl in the dugout. We had this like plastic set of bowling pins and bowling balls, and when games started getting slow, we would pull them out and we would start bowling in the dugout.
See, the games wouldn't have been slow if you had a runner on second base to start extra innings.
That's true.
Next mailbag is from Andrew in Connecticut, and he says, I know the answer, but give me some hope and maybe lie to me. Any chance at all that Austin can beat out Hicks for the fourth outfielder spot? Guardy can be backup center fielder. I'd rather see Austin over Hicks now with Carter around.
So here's my conspiracy theory. I don't think Aaron Hicks is going to be on this team for very long. I think Aaron Hicks is the guy that's gonna fade away into the sunset. I think we saw him last year. We saw him for a pretty long time, and he did absolutely nothing.
Semi-regular playing time for a while.
Yes,
there.
And he did nothing. He did absolutely nothing offensively. And to tell you the truth, everybody talks about how much range he has in the outfield, and we all know about his 105 mile an hour ball that he throws from the outfield. But I don't particularly think he plays a great outfielder either, because he takes over and over again. We saw him take bad routes to the balls. You know, there are certain things that I think he would have caught. You know, for all of the problems that Carlos Beltran had out there, at least the guy would take, you know, good routes to the balls. He probably covered more range than he should have. You know, towards the end, with the everything was broken basically. And, you know,
Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, he would still take decent angles at balls and would make some plays.
Okay, he took good angles at balls. He just came up 15 strides short.
The problem with Aaron Hicks is that he's got the athleticism, but I don't think he plays that great of an outfield. And if he's not going to hit the ball, he gives you no flexibility. Really, he gives you.
Yeah,
he's a guy that's really. You know, he's not that much. He doesn't.
It's
have
like
that
having
much value.
A pitcher. It's like having a pitcher in the lineup. That's what he was last year. And I mean, I think they like his defense and the fact that he can play all three outfield spots. That's something that Tyler Austin and Rob Refsnyder and Matt Holliday, name your backup outfielder. Only Hicks can play center field. So he's got that going for him. That's why I think he breaks camp with the Yankees.
Yeah, but we're also looking at Mason Williams is another guy who came on the scene late last year that will compete with him. I mean, you're talking about a guy who can play all outfield positions. Mason Williams has got a much better bat right now than Aaron Hicks. I mean, Mason Williams came up. Granted, it was a very short time.
That.
Yeah, he hit 300. He was hitting the ball well. I know it was a short sample, but at least he showed something. This is a guy that was a very highly touted prospect, had some injuries, and is now supposedly healthy. He showed last year that he was healthy. He's got the speed and athleticism to play. That's a guy that could very well compete with Aaron Hicks. And why are we keeping a guy like Aaron Hicks around if Mason Williams is out there who could play all these positions but also add some offense? There's going to be people competing. The outfield is extremely deep, I think, with the Yankees organization.
Cluttered.
Yeah, so guys like Aaron Hicks are definitely not secured a job. So I could see him not making the team.
Yeah. See, that's one of those that I know Girardi, and I know his thinking on a roster and how he loves to put in his defensive subs. And I just see Hicks on this team, unfortunately.
Mason Williams, watch out. He's going to be the
remember
guy.
Remember the two-week span when Hicks started hitting and everyone was getting all their panties in a bunch about Aaron Hicks? That didn't last very
long. It was
long,
the Jackie Bradley Jr. talk again. The ridiculous speak of Jackie Bradley Jr. and Aaron Hicks.
But it kind of goes back to why Tyler Austin was a little frustrated, because he knows he's at a disadvantage in the outfield. His chance at making this team was first base.
And now
that was his best chance.
Maybe third base.
Everyone should cross their fingers and hope that's true. All right, what do we have next?
Next is from Kyle Roberts on Twitter at KRoberts0844. He said, "Hey guys, love listening to the show. I live in Colorado, originally from Connecticut, and really enjoy hearing Yankees talk. Good work on being number one. If you guys were players, what are your at-bat songs?" And this is something that we definitely talked about in like episode one or two.
Episode number one. Yeah. Yep, it was episode number one.
You know what I realized is I went back to listen to that. When I saw this message, I went back to check out episode one. iTunes only has, they stop. They don't have the entire roster. I think they might only keep 100. So
oh, really?
We might have to start a feed for the archives.
Ooh.
Yeah, because I could only go back to like 17.
You can get it on the website, right?
Yeah, you can go on the website. But I was on my phone. I was looking at iTunes at the time, and I noticed that. So I might have to start like a little archive for the Bronx Pinstripe Show.
Yeah, this was something that we mentioned in our first ever episode, and we planned on getting every guest who came on the show what their at-bat song would be. And I think we did it for the first guest and then forgot to do it from there on out.
It definitely was short-lived.
Like many things that we mean to do and just forget about.
Yes. Or plan to
mine,
do it and then just don't do them.
Right. I said mine was Dear Mr. Fantasy by Traffic.
Yeah.
And I'm sticking to it. I still think that that would be my go-to.
Yeah, that's a great song. I mentioned two. One of them was a Lupe Fiasco song, although Lupe Fiasco really disappointed me with his last album. Like the first five or six tracks are just terrible. And then he gets into some of his old stuff. It's the same flavor as like it used to be. I don't know. He's disappointed me on that one. So I may get off my Lupe Fiasco train just because I don't like his new stuff. Definitely a Springsteen song for sure. There's no doubt. I would have, some hip hop and then it would be a Springsteen song. I don't know which one, maybe Badlands. I think I mentioned 10th Avenue Freeze Out would probably be the one. I think that's the one I mentioned last time. That's one of my favorite songs. So let's go with that. Let's go with 10th Avenue Freeze Out from Springsteen.
It, the whole at-bat walk-up songs. Do you remember, how Jeter, you could kind of tell. If you go back and look at, if you Google like Derek Jeter walk-up song history, I remember seeing a list of it, and it's literally just pulled from like America's Top 40 each year.
Well, the last one he did was the Jay-Z song, right? The one, the Jay-Z and Alicia Keys.
Now You're in New York. That was like the song of the 2009 championship.
I know, but I think wasn't that one of the last ones he started walking up to, because he started getting all... it was actually
possibly
pretty awesome. I think it was a pretty cool song to walk into, actually.
No, I agree. It's just funny to look at. It kind of goes with the times, like whatever was on the top charts in the late 90s and the early 2000s. Got some Eminem thrown in there, I think.
Derek Jeter knows how to make people happy. What can you
he
say?
He also knows how to get people pregnant.
He does.
Did you see the news?
Apparently, yes. We didn't even talk about that. The big news.
Daddy Jeter.
We're going to.
I love how.
We're all
I think I got an MLB at-bat update that Derek Jeter and Hannah Davis were expecting.
And I swear I saw a picture of Beyonce with Derek Jeter's face on it.
Yes, Justin put that in our Facebook group.
Yeah, that was disturbing.
All right. Somehow go back and listen to that first ever episode. You went back, you said you tried to listen to it, you couldn't though?
I forgot after, again, this is one of those things I meant to go listen to and then I forgot. I was looking on iTunes at the time And then it completely left my brain after that. So
I'm sure those episodes are
terrible. They're probably terrible.
Next message is from Ricardo. He says, with all this youth movement and the Yankees finally trusting the kids, it got me thinking about the 90s and 2000s and even further back. If you look at all the success the Yankees have had, some of it has come through smart free agency, but it has mainly been a product of their own system and trades. The Giambi, A-Rod, Sheffield, Brown, etc. moves were big money.
Yes, were big money. Andrew.
The comma's in the wrong place. They were big money moves, comma, but they weren't the successes the boss and fans were hoping for. So I guess my question is, when people say the Yankees buy their championships, aren't they technically wrong?
It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. You know, I used to get in, when I was in college, I used to have this argument all the time. It used to piss me off. There was a buddy of mine, Tyler.
It's because it matters. You know, you could say it doesn't matter, but it matters.
No, now it doesn't matter is what I really meant. At that point, yes, it was an argument that all the Red Sox fans kept coming at. Before 04, that's all they would say. That's the only thing they would say. They just kept leaning on, you buy your championships. And I could not handle it anymore. We used to get into like knockdown, drag-out fights when I was in college because I thought they were so stupid and the dumbest people alive when they would come at me with these stupid theories. And they were just so mad because they haven't won anything. And they were just looking at me with pure jealous eyes. And it was fine, and I understood that. But no. Yeah, did they? Yes, they did. Okay? They did. They bought a lot of really good players. The Yankees were throwing money at people when a lot of teams were not. And now everybody's throwing money at team at players. It doesn't matter anymore. It's with the luxury tax and all the balance that Major League Baseball has implemented. It's working. You're seeing teams that are spending a ton of money, not doing as well. You're seeing teams that are competing on lower budgets. You know, there's probably, as far as competition throughout the season, it seems like there's a lot more parity now.
What do you consider buying a championship? Here's what I consider. I don't think they bought the 90s championships because the main player, the most right. important players on those teams were homegrown.
Agree.
However, I do kind of feel like they bought the 09 championship because they don't win it without CC Teixeira and even AJ Burnett, and they bought all those players.
Well, see, that was
so. I feel like the most important players on the roster need to be homegrown; otherwise, you bought a championship.
I agree with that, but at the same time, you got to have these players gel together. You just the fact, just because you we know this because the Yankees have assembled, you know, a team of high-priced guys that have been terrible. So the fact that these guys have to gel together, they have to be the right purchases, the right guys to fit into the puzzle. And that's why those teams in the 90s were so good, was because we did have a lot of guys. Yes, they were getting paid a lot, but they were homegrown guys. That's why I never understood the argument that the Yankees bought their championships at any point in the 90s. Because they didn't. They grew these guys, they paid them, and then they brought in complimentary pieces. Maybe they, you know, they paid some. And at that point, if you look back at the way guys were signing, people wanted to play for the New York Yankees at that point. That's really not the case anymore, where people want to go and play for a specific team as much. It's not the same. That's not the same feeling as it used to be.
No.
In the,
well,
in the
New
late
York
90s.
I still think New York has a draw, but it's way diminished from.
It's just
10,
different because
years
you're
ago.
Because of social media, because of all the marketing channels that are out there now. You can make a name for yourself in Kansas City or, you know, in a smaller market.
What do you think? Take away the current rosters, what do you think the most desirable baseball city is for a free agent?
I still think it's New York. I still think New York's the city to be in if you're talking about the desirable. You're talking about off the field, right? Because if that's what you're talking
about. No, like if you were a free agent, if you take your average free agent, he's looking to sign a $100 million contract.
Yeah.
Take the current rosters and winning out of it. Let's just assume everyone's on a level playing field. What do you think his top choice would be?
Well,
I have an answer.
If that's the case, then people are going to the warm weather.
Yeah, they're going to. Well, I mean, the summer is warm anyway. But in New York, it's warm in the summer. But then you got to live in the South in the off season. So I feel like L.A. Or Miami would be top choices.
I guess, but like you said, they have different houses. They go to different places. These guys really aren't. It's not a problem for them. So I don't know. I still think because you have to take into consideration what your capacity is off the field. And if we're talking about off the field with all the things that are off the field, marketing, advertising dollars, all that stuff, then it's New York. It's the big markets. That's where you want to go. If you want to be a superstar, you go to a town where you can be a superstar.
Yeah. Cities like Pittsburgh, you can't argue, have the same cachet that New York does. It's just, I don't care about social media. I don't care about the internet. I don't care how far you can build a brand outside of major cities. It just doesn't. That's the bottom line.
No, but you can do it way more now than you ever could.
Yes. Sure. It's still not as big.
Right.
And that question from Ricardo about buying championships actually kind of relates to a voicemail we got. We got a voicemail from Tom. So let's take a listen to that right now.
What's up, guys? First time caller here, Tom Cronin, TomCronin161 on Twitter. Just started listening to the show a few weeks ago. Big fan of it. I'm right on the border of Massachusetts and Connecticut, so I live right in the hotbed of the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry. I got two things. My first thing is that I don't get all the hate. I don't want to say hatred, but all the riffraff that some Yankee fans give Brian Cashman, Joe Girardi, and Hal Steinbrenner. I mean, you can't say they don't put money into the team. They spent $500 million in 2014 with McCann and Ellsbury and Tanaka and Beltran, and a few years before that with the 09 team, which was basically bought too. Cashman rebuilt the farm system. They haven't had a losing season since 92. Shut the fuck up. And I'm not talking to you guys. I'm talking about all these fans that, you know, you can't win the World Series every goddamn year. And the fact that they've had this winning season streak for 20 plus years says a lot about the organization. And I don't see that streak ending anytime soon, even though a lot of predictions are they could be 81-81 this year, but I expect maybe an 85-87 win team, no less than 81 wins though in my eyes. And the other thing, thanks for being one of the better Yankee blogs out there. So I appreciate Bronx Pinstripes getting the real message out to fans and having actual good opinions. So keep doing the great work, and I look forward to your guys' responses to my questions. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Tom, for the voicemail. I'm laughing a little bit, Scott, because towards the end of Tom's voicemail, he threw a little bit of a dig at a competitive website of ours.
Yeah, so we're not playing it on the air, Tom, just because
we don't want to start.
We're not knocking other people down. You know, they do their thing.
We don't
want to
start
thing.
Website battles.
We're just not worried about other websites doing their thing. That's fine. They got their thing. We got our thing.
But Tom, let me just say, I agree with you.
Yeah, just, you're not that far off. But he definitely gets animated about this stuff. So, you know, what are your thoughts about Cashman, Steinbrenner, and Girardi?
Yeah, I agree. I think Cashman probably gets. I hate the fire Cashman. You know how the hashtag fire Cashman gets going on Yankees Twitter. I hate that because I still think that everything that comes with being the Yankees GM is pretty difficult. And I'll get on Cashman. I've got on Cashman a million times, like for the Jacoby Ellsbury signing, for not signing Robinson Cano. The list goes on. But I still think, and especially where we are now, Cashman's done a good job. Girardi, I'll get on Girardi.
This is a big year for Girardi. This is a big year for Girardi.
And Cashman. I mean, Cashman's a free agent.
Cashman signing.
Do they call him free agents?
No.
Last year of Cashman's
hanging,
deal.
Hanging duck?
Dead duck? What's it called? Lame duck.
Lame duck.
Girardi is a lame duck manager. I think if Girardi goes out there and puts up like 75 wins, he'll get canned. Again, though, I don't see that happening. Like Tom said, he thinks this is a mid-80s team. That's probably a little bit optimistic. High 80s would be optimistic. But every year that Girardi's been there, he's got them over 500. The team has been plus 500 for 3 decades, it seems, at this point. I'm almost 30 years old, and pretty much my entire baseball watching life, they've been above 500.
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking about this for a while. I like Cashman. I liked what he does. I like everything he's done in the past 2 to 3 years. I think there's been a lot of very good stuff that's setting this team up for the future. I think Steinbrenner is different than his father. He's putting himself, he's definitely more conscious about the budget, and it's a different game now. You have to be, to an extent, because of the luxury tax. I mean, the luxury tax is a game changer to me with the way that you manage your roster, the way that you manage your budget. So you have to be conscious of that stuff. And Girardi, the reason, not even just because he's a lame duck manager this year, but I think it's such a big year for him because he's got such a young team now. And the Yankees do have to make this decision. If they're moving forward into the future with this young team, they're going to want a manager who can who can grow with this team. And if Girardi's not the guy, and they really do feel that way, which I don't think they feel that way, but if they did, if this was a disaster of a season, they got to make that change now, because these guys are all ready to come up, if not up already. And there are guys that are almost ready to be on this roster. So there needs to be somebody in place with a system that needs to be in place, and with building blocks and security and some a sense of you know, that these guys have someone they can trust. And I do think Girardi's probably that guy. We've talked about this ad nauseum as well, with how he, you know, I think his best manager years is when he's working with younger rosters. He can relate better. I don't think Girardi enjoys managing these contracts. It's not his style. So we're going to see, I think, the true Girardi this year with the position players. Unfortunately, I think we've already seen the true Girardi with the bullpen and the pitching staff, but I think we're going to see a very different guy now with the position young player. So I think that he's going to be on the, both of these guys will be extended.
Can you believe this is Girardi's 10th season with the Yankees managing?
Yeah, it went fast. It definitely went fast.
He's been there almost as long as Joe Torre was.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. And then his playing days, too. I mean, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah, he's a Yankee through and through. I don't really have much to add to what you just said. I definitely agree with it. Tom, thank you for the voicemail, and thank you for the laugh about that other website. All right, we have one final thing. It's from Sock Therapy. He's got another game for us. So he says, "What's going on, fellas? Since my buddy Earl spoke so highly of the show, I've been burning to make my guess who I am. So here are some clues. I played my entire 16-year career with the Yankees. I have a .297 lifetime batting average with the Yankees. I have the fifth most hits as a Yankee with 2,336, the seventh most home runs as a Yankee with 287, and the seventh most RBIs with 1,257. I have the sixth most games played as a Yankee with 2,076. This is about where I started to guess who it was. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I was started. I had a couple people in my mind at number two, and I think at this point I had it.
Yeah, so he goes on. I was the AL batting champion once and an All-Star five times. And then
that's
he says,
for me.
Yeah, the Yankees were under .500 in my first 2 years, then over .500 the rest of my career. That definitely solidified it. I feel like everyone listening should have gotten it by now. Clue number seven, the same person and or group owned the Yankees over the course of my entire career, meaning the ownership has never changed. Number eight, my number is retired by the Yankees, but I am not in the Hall of Fame. I fell off the ballot after my second year of eligibility. Clue number nine, the Yankees were 69-47 in the playoffs during my career. We were also 17-8 in the playoff series, winning it all four times. I only played under two managers in my career. So, Scott, tell everyone who this is.
Bernie Baseball, Bernie Williams.
Burn, baby, burn. Listen, Sock, you got to make them a little more difficult than this.
And shorter,
I think both
shorter, please. you're making Andrew read 10 clues. I mean, it's like walking a plank. It's terrible. Although you did well on this one. You redeemed yourself quite well
on
this one.
I only screwed up on the other one because of the punctuation. Mm.
Those damn missing commas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Bernie Williams. That was pretty easy. I got that. I mean, I had a guess after number two. And then, I just started narrowing down from there.
You ask me pretty much any trivia from the 1990s to 2000s Yankees, I'm pretty confident I can get it. Bernie, I know we've said this 1,000 times, but I hate that Bernie was left off the core four.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right. It really doesn't. And I don't know if that was just a marketing thing, because core four sounds great. You know, Fab Five was already taken, but they could have brought Fab Five back. They could have done it. He should be on that.
Yeah, I mean, he was every bit a part of that. He was their center fielder and number four hitter for the entire championship run. I don't know how much more important you can get.
And he was homegrown.
Right.
He's a Yankee.
In that book I read about Buster, a lot of the Yankees executives did not view Bernie as an elite player, which is why they kind of held his feet to the fire when they were looking to re-sign him in the late 90s.
I think Bernie and Posada are similar caliber players when you're talking about overall careers and you're looking back at a guy. I think, I don't know, to me they're kind of in the same ballpark. they both kind of they fell off. Both of them fell off early in the Hall of Fame voting.
Well, you know what it is? They played in a time where gaudy numbers stood out.
But they were both very good players.
Bernie never hit 50 home runs, but guess what? He batted 300 pretty much every year in his prime. He won the batting title. He hit 30 home runs or 25 home runs. He drove in over 100 RBIs. He played a tremendous center field. Yeah. I don't know how much more complete of a player you can get. Same goes for Posada and being a solid catcher. I mean, but they don't have the 55 home run season that sticks out like a sore thumb, like a pimple right on your nose.
Ooh, it's kind of a shame because I think if he did play in a different era, you know, maybe people will be talking about him in the grand scheme of things a little bit differently.
Oh God!
He wore those glasses. Those are some classic glasses, early Bernie.
If Bernie played right now, he'd be considered one of the 10 best players in the game. I mean, because he was an all around player. He had he couldn't throw. Other than that, he was an all around player.
Yep, I miss Bernie. He was a hell of a player.
And now he's fat.
He's a hell of a guitarist now.
All right. Thank you to everyone who submitted mailbag questions and Tom for submitting the voicemail. We definitely hope to get more voicemails as the regular season gets underway. Get in touch with the show at Yankees Podcast. You can tweet me at Andrew_talk. You can tweet Scott at Scott Reinen.
You forgot your own Twitter handle.
What did I say?
You said Andrew_talk.
Jesus, it used to be Yankees_talk. Now it's Andrew_Rotondi. Wow. Dude, it's been a long ass day. I've been up since 6 in the morning. Voicemail 646-480-0342. The Fan Shop promo code was pitchers and catchers, all one word, and don't misspell it. Scott, out in San Francisco, any last words?
I got nothing. I'm ready to get back to the East Coast. This West Coast thing is a little strange. Everything is way too early. I'm ready to get back.
Imagine watching baseball games at 4 in the afternoon every day.
Yeah, I mean, I could get used to it probably, but everybody's a little too nice out here. I need to get back to the East Coast where people are jaded and will yell at me if I look at them all.
Good stuff. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. Talk to you next week. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.